Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
It's Laurie because Johnny's downstairs, and I forgot that I called him on my cell phone, so we're going to have to get him up somehow. And it's Bugsy is back with us. Hey, Bugs.
How are you, my friends?
I am fine, just fine, and it's wonderful to have you here because I don't know of anybody better who can give us insight into this crazy world, and especially the crazy world of cars, than you. So thanks for coming.
Nobody knows less than I do.
That's exactly why we invited you.
I'll bet you, Bugs. I don't know.
So you got a half an hour to prove it, Bugs. How are you, Izzy?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good to hear,
and
Bugsy.
And happy Passover.
Good to hear you.
Happy
Thank
Passover.
You and happy Easter.
Thank you. So here's the question of the hour, or at least the question of the half hour, Bugs, is what really is going on in the world of electric cars, hybrid cars, no more gas cars? How is this affecting production with the automotive manufacturers?
I think anybody really knows. And I'll tell you why. Some of the car companies have gone all in for electric, and I don't think they left themselves any options. Other car companies have given themselves variables, whether they can use the same platform for diesel or electric or even hydrogen, or, you know, a combination of everything that's out there. So the ones that left themselves options, I think they're going to be the big dog in the tall grass. The ones that went all in for electric, I don't know. I don't think anybody's got any answers. You know, people that buy them and they've got a couple of cars in the family, and they buy an electric vehicle, and, you know, they got a place to plug in at home overnight, they're content. But somebody that buys it for their sole means of transportation, even Elon Musk said, not everybody should have a battery-powered car. You can't, you know, when it's time to go and get out of Dodge or you got to go do errands, it may not be ready. And too many variables once you get out on the road, because you've got different types of chargers. Some of them take credit cards. Some of them you have to have an app. Some of them you have to have an account. If somebody gets there ahead of you with an appointment, you might sit by the side of the road waiting, you know, for your turn in line at the charger when it's, you know, 10 below zero. So I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I don't know what's driving this bus, to be honest with you. And I think that one of the things is the chip availability has put a hitch in the giddy up because they were delivering cars with some of the features missing. They finally got desperate and started delivering heated seats without heat and cool seats without cool. And then later on they said, we'll get you the correct chip when they become available. So it's mass confusion out there. And the dealers, I don't think they know either, because they're caught between a rock and a hard place, because a lot of the manufacturers are trying to follow the Tesla model, where you buy a car online, it's delivered to your home. The only time you go to the dealership is for service. I think Ford's going all in on their electric vehicles, that they're going with the Tesla model, and it's going to eliminate eventually, I believe, the dealer body. I'm sure they can't be real happy about that. So I don't think anybody, it's like the old Abbott and Costello routine. Who's on first? I don't know. He's on second, you know? So I don't really know. You guys still there?
I'm sure they are, but just blown away by what you just said.
Here's the practical and personal viewpoint.
Yes.
Johnny and I have had a chance to drive a number of these electric vehicles. Okay, so here we are in Pinehurst, North Carolina, 1 hour and 15 minutes from Raleigh, which is the nearest fast recharging station. If we use the one in the village, it takes 18 hours, so how are you going to swing that overnight unless you live right next door? And we can't take any long-distance driving, because although they say that some of these vehicles have such a wide range of like 300 miles, it's not accurate. You can have that, they can say 300 miles, but when you get into mountainous area or into back roads or you know, small towns or whatever, it, all of a sudden
it's
215. Yeah.
Or temperature variables. So if it's freezing cold, you got the heat on. If it's ice, if it's hot out, you got the AC on. So there's many, many variables. There's no cut and dry. This is uncharted territory.
Well, isn't it like the cart before the horse? Because there are no national recharging stations where you can count on going across country
society,
or even across state.
Isn't society being driven by that today? We're going to take away your gas-powered stoves. Okay, what are you going to give us for an option? Mm-hmm. Electric stoves. Okay, the grid. Nobody's minding the store on an ancient grid that could be down at any minute. And what do you do then? How do you cook your food then? You go out the backyard, you build a fire? No answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything they tell us, you have to, this is how you do construction. This is what you put in your house. You know what? Baloney. I'll put a propane gas grill in my house before my wife will give up her gas stove. I got a defender.
Yes, exactly.
I like to eat. As you well know.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
But
patrons saying a free lunch.
And but what about these manufacturers of gas stoves? They're looking at a severe, you know, slash in their revenue. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But the government is holding the reins on this car thing. They're offering the car manufacturers all kinds of subsidies. What's going on there?
The car industry. It's every industry. Now they want to reduce milk production. The people that get WIC, they want them to cut the milk consumption for small children by 25%. Why would
Good
you
Lord.
Go after the dairy farmers? Why would you go after, you know, you can't buy non-GMO seeds. Bill Gates is every non-GMO seeds, hoarding non-GMO seeds in the country as far as production is concerned. He's buying up farmland all over the country. Why is he doing that? He's the biggest farm owner, landowner in the United States right now. Why is he doing that? This is all about control. You're only going to have one source to go buy food, to go buy fuel. I mean, look at the fuel. You got all these gas stations that are, you know, looking for fuel, but we're given our strategic oil supply. We've depleted that down to zero. That all went overseas for the most part, and to shave a few pennies off of a gallon of gas. What do we do now? You can't drill anywhere. You know what I mean? They give out contracts, and then they put so many restrictions on them, they can't drill. But if you talk to some folks, and they'll say, oh, they give out plenty of contracts. You can drill in your backyard. No, you can't. No, you can't. There's got to be some kind of a glow-in-the-dark ficus or some kind of special frog that turns a certain color, and you can't disturb anything. I mean, we've gotten ridiculous on what we can and we can't do, and that limits what we can buy, what we can eat, what gets delivered to our house. Go try to get a plumber these days. Go try to get somebody that's a coming to work in your house. They're backed up 6 months down the road. You can't get anything. We're in caught in traffic here in the United States. We're sitting in a traffic jam. Nothing's moved. Rails, they're all right. They're coming off the tracks. But the rail transportation is okay. We can ship stuff by tankers where they're sitting off of the harbors, and all the fruit and vegetables are turning to garbage while they're waiting to be unloaded. So everywhere you look at, I don't care what industry it is, and you could say the government is driving the bus with automobiles, and they certainly are. But look at every industry. Look at banking. People don't realize they signed a law into effect a year ago in March. We're converting over to electronic currency, but nobody pays attention. And in December, they made it law. You know, and people could dismiss it out of hand, except when you go and you try to take a crypto whatever and go buy a loaf of bread someplace. And the bodega down the street doesn't accept electronic currency. Target wouldn't take cash, and now all of a sudden they're taking cash again. It was strictly credit cards for a while.
And meanwhile,
Meanwhile,
the whole world is trying to get gold back, but how is that going to ever happen?
I don't think we can ever go back to the gold standard. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think there's enough gold.
Yeah.
Everybody's got gold. Supposedly has gold in the vaults everywhere. The international gold depository and money when the World Trade Center went down, that was all underground. There was a lot of it underground. From all the central banks had their gold stored there. Fort Knox, nobody's seen that gold since Hector was a pup. Nobody even knows if it's there. You know? So, I mean, it's all smoke. I mean, it's only a movie. That's what I keep telling myself. We're living in a movie. What the outcome is going to be, nobody knows. You know, they haven't reached the end yet.
Well, the outcome, obviously, in that instance, is that Goldfinger did get that gold out of Fort Knox after all. But with the automotive, he did it. But with the automotive industry, you know, sanctioning electric cars. Okay, so people buy these things, then they realize they're sitting on a dud because it can't drive anywhere. At least, not even to the grocery store in some instances. So then, what happens? What happens when the world finally realizes we can't pull this off? We need to go back to gas. What happens when they say
out in California, you can't charge your car today. Consequently, you can't go anywhere. What happens then? Mm-hmm. Nobody raised an eyebrow. All these clapping seals went along with it. It's great. It's this and that. Does anybody look at where the rare earth minerals come from to make these batteries? Does anybody see how it comes out of the ground?
Afghanistan. They come from the largest is in which isn't it funny how all of a sudden we pull out of Afghanistan, now we don't have any battery production. What is it? It's tungsten or something. The largest mine is in Afghanistan for making batteries. So,
you know how much
and of course
diesel
China.
Is expended on a daily basis for one of those machines to pull a little bit of lithium out of the ground or some of the other rare earth minerals? And then what do they do with the meat? You're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gallons a day in each machine to get a little bit of rare earth minerals. And then what do they do that with what they bring out of the ground? They've got people squatting down with scarves around their faces with their feet in water, and they make big rocks into little rocks. And then where does the material go? It goes to China to make the batteries and solar panels.
That's
I don't
understand. Again, control.
I'm not the
it's
smartest
all about
guy in
control.
The room. But even if you get hit in the head with a hammer a number of times, after a while, you've got to say, stop.
Well, it wasn't that long ago when China was buying out all the metals that they could all over the world. And now they got it. And we don't have squat. And so is this why you buy an American-make car, except 80% of it is made in China or Mexico or something? We don't have the materials.
Everybody, that's been going on for a long time, where they make the materials and they fabricate the stuff in a foreign country and they bring it here for assembly. A lot of the stuff even the pharmaceuticals, the filler materials and all our generic drugs come from China, for the most part from China. Good luck trying to buy generic drugs not too far down the road, because they're going to say, we don't have them. Have you tried to buy amoxicillin lately? Or I take Ozempic. And when I went to the pharmacy, they said, we're out. I said, how can you be out of something that somebody needs to live on, a diabetic medication?
Right.
And they said they're prescribing it for people to lose weight. The Kardashians thought it was good.
Oh,
we're living in a Kardashian world.
See, that's what's happening a lot.
Those people
are doing
nothing. They stand for nothing.
Weight loss.
They fall for everything. They sold themselves out a long time ago, but this is what people look up to. So this all started a long time ago when we were knee-high to a grasshopper, and probably even before that. But this has been a long time. It's just now starting to come. The soup is starting to boil. It's starting to cook now, and we're starting to see all this stuff. And even people that are aren't particularly paying attention to what goes on around them in life, they're starting to get hit over the head. They're looking at prices. They go to and they see supermarket shelves empty. The gas station shuts down at 5 o'clock. They're out of medication. You can't get baby formula, and on we go. But it's all about control, all of it.
Well, it doesn't help. It doesn't help that we're in such an uproar. We're not. Driving Me Crazy is not a political show, but the world has just, imploded. At least America has imploded with all that's going on, not the least of which is the president and the way things are being managed, or perhaps mismanaged, but it just doesn't seem like we have any kind of plan to get through this. It's total confusion.
We don't have a plan, but American people are resilient. They're going to find their way. They're going to find their voice. They're going to speak up because they trusted the government too long, that the government was there to do the right thing for them. People believed in the government, going back to all the wars we ever got into, and people put on their uniforms and sent their kids off to war, and then we didn't take care of the kids when they came home. And now we're in a position where people are older, a lot of the people like us are older, and we're opening our eyes, and we've got kids and we got grandkids, and we're telling them how we feel. They've been indoctrinated from the time they went to kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, and the stuff they're seeing at school is totally opposite of what grounded parents are teaching them, the stuff that they're learning in school. It makes no sense, to look to bring charges against parents that are speaking up for their kids and to do things to kids that are underage and not tell the parents. When are we all going to get together and speak up? You don't have to go to war. You don't have to go to the streets. Speak up. But speak up together. Discuss. Speak up together. If you see something, say something. Call your friend. Say, what do you think about this? How come when we go into CVS and Walgreens, everything is under lock and key? You got to get a sales representative, of which there are a few in all the stores go into, and say, can I buy a razor blade? Can I buy some antiperspirant? I don't mind smelling too bad, but I don't want to smell real bad. Can you help me? And this is all the stores that we're going into, and empty shelves. I mean, where are we going with all this? Is it going to stop, and where is it going to stop?
Well, a lot of people are just simply calling it the end of days because everything is catastrophic.
No, it's not the end of days. As long as there's breath in our bodies, you just can't go quietly into the night. You have to stand up, and you have to say, no, you're not going to do this. I'm not going to tolerate this. If somebody makes an idiot statement, you don't have to scream and yell in the store and draw a crowd, but you can say you're wrong. And then have facts to tell them why they're wrong. Because this is, we're living in a society where people get their information from The View. And I know, Whoopi is the sage, and Joy Behar is, she knows a lot, but they don't know much. These people that get up and bloviate, there's no facts. If you parse it, there aren't any facts. They're shouting us down and they're saying, this is the way it is because it is. Well, why is it that way? Well, we're not going to discuss that here. We're not going to talk about that. You're just going to do what you're going to do. Well, I'm not. And I hope anybody that's listening doesn't. Ask questions and don't tolerate it. Call your representatives and drive them nuts. Put it on speed dial on your phone and call these guys. They're getting a paycheck. All they're worried about is their paycheck and their pensions. Call them up and take them to task. Unfortunately, most of them got nice people answering the phone. So when you call up, you can't scream and yell because they got these really sweet people that are answering the phone, and they know what they're doing. They know you're not going to go off on the person that answers the phone and say, okay, we'll write it down, we'll take notes, and we'll pass it along to the rep or the senator or whatever it is. But don't be afraid to drop a dime and make a call. Don't call into the talk shows. Send text messages. You send text messages onto the talk shows now. Send them text messages. Tell them how you feel. Because if we let it go, we're letting it go. We can't let it go. We can't let our country go. For the most part, I and my friends are roughly the same age, and we're closer to the end than we are in the beginning. If we don't try to fix now or stand up for something, when are we going to do it? We'll be gone. And the kids don't know any better.
Ray Bradbury wrote a book in 1953, the year, born when we were born, Bugs.
53.
Yep. The year that we were born, Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury was written. And you may or may not have seen the movie with Julie Christie and Werner Klimper. And
I did.
It is so true today. That movie is so true today, 70 years on. It is literally what our society is like today. You're told what to do, told what to told what to do, told what to watch, told what to behave, what to say, told how to behave. And you now look at, there's a report now that this whole COVID vaccination thing was a fraud and responsible for tons and tons and tons of deaths. And yet we all did what we were told to do. I mean, we were told to do
because we weren't left options. You can't go here unless you have credentials. Show us your credentials. Where are your papers? You can't go to a movie. You can't, right?
Yes, yeah, that's communist.
Repeat itself. People are going to smarten up and wake up that we're being pushed into a corner. We don't want the people that are good to have weapons to defend themselves. But the bad guys can have anything they want. They can wear masks. They can stand in the street with black masks on over their faces, and they can stand there with machine guns. And if you look the wrong way, or you linger too long in front of a clinic, and they want to arrest you, who's the ones that have the rights? Who are the ones that are being allowed to skate the system? It's not us. We're home in bed, and we're going to work every day. It's up to us, though. These kids that are out in the daytime wearing these hoodies and masks and hitting people with signs and macing them, when they pull the mask off, they're all little chubby little couch commandos, couch potatoes, that live in their parents' basement from the suburbs. These aren't inner-city kids. These are kids that are going out for a day and being compensated. You know, a lot of these cities, when they have riots and so forth, they're looking for the paychecks, and they're being paid so much a day to cause issues. And then they did an expose on it a while back, $1,500 a day. And after the riots in Philadelphia, they were looking for their paycheck. Where's our money?
Good God.
So, you know, these people aren't there because they believe in a cause. They get off the couch. The keyboard commandos get off the couch. The offendanistas. Hezzy and I were talking about it earlier. I call them the offendanistas because if you don't use the correct pronouns, I'm offended. If you look at me the wrong way, I'm offended. They don't have real jobs. They don't know what it's like to survive, buy, support a family, earn a living, contribute to society. They have no idea. They're living in a virtual world. They go to McDonald's, they get their meal in 60 seconds or less in the line, and they want everything right now. But they don't know how to contribute and pay back or further their cause legitimately. Everything is look at me, and I'm more important than you, and the ones that it seems like the core of the country are the least important. I don't know where this ends.
I don't even know how to tackle where it begins, because there's so much out there that's incredulous to me, at least. I don't understand how we can even be where we are today. I mean, it's true. How did America get to be the way it is?
I don't think it's as bad as we think it is, because the loudest are the least. We're assuming because they're the loudest and they're at the forefront and they're causing 500 riots in the course of the summer of love and so forth. Right? I don't think there's as many of them as they would lead us to believe. I think there's more of us. I think there's still more of us.
Johnny was reading the other day that in the 1950s, 60s, 90% of the population was patriotic. Today, the poll is 30% are patriotic. And I think that's beginning. I think that really is where it begins and ends as a citizen of this country, to have at least respect for our country. But when our leaders don't even respect the letter of the law, then everything is going as it is. It's just literally going down the toilet. So how do you...
Hezzy and I talked about it earlier. If you put a lobster into the water and you turn the heat up, it goes to sleep and dies. If you throw it into a boiling pot, it struggles. Think about when we stopped saluting the flag, when we stopped having a moment of prayer in the schools. Little by little, these little things were an integral part of society got pulled away from us. Little by little, not all at once. And then you realize if you read things, you look at things, and you look at different sides, you realize that all these creatures are all joined together. They're all related by marriage, You look at pictures of these people that were all involved in Burisma. They're all sons and daughters of elected officials, including some crime bosses from Boston, their nephew. So all of this that's going on below the surface, a lot of the same people, a lot of the same crime families are still, you know, pulling the strings. You know, we're going to work every day. We're too busy to be involved in picketing and we're out earning a living. You know, we can't go stand out with the sign until after 5 o'clock when we get home from work. You know, vote with your dollars. Vote with your dollars. If you see something stupid, stop buying their product. Buy somebody else's product. They'll catch on after a while. Look at Disney. Disney's going broke.
Oh, it's so sad.
Aside from their theme parks, I think they're down almost 50%. But all these corporations, they're all laying off. You know, Facebook, you know, all these communications platforms, they're all laying people off. They don't want to go back to work. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go back to the office. And when you do, you want to pick it because you don't, your espresso machine, we're taking that away. We're taking your lunches, your free lunches away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to go into the office every day. Too bad. You don't have a job anymore. We need you. So they laid them all off. And it's not just communications. It's not automotive. It's everything.
Walmart's closing 9 big Walmart stores around the country. McDonald's shut every single one of their corporate offices throughout the United States this week because they've got to reorganize. I mean, when you're talking about Walmart and McDonald's, I mean, that's ever present in everybody's life. I mean,
they lost their way. They lost their way. They took people for granted. And then they started lying to them and telling them what their philosophy was, and finally people are waking up. That's why their profits are down. How many people are going to Disney? It's the movies that are dying, down 50%. Their theme parks, not so much, even though they're crazy expensive. But people are saying, you know what? If Disney's going to teach my kid all this stuff, I'm not going to let my kid watch it. We're not going to the park and spending thousands of dollars a day, you know, for a family. Just to be able to go to a ball game with a beer and a hot dog and watch a game for a few bucks. Try to do it now with two or three kids. Can't do it.
You got it.
So we got to wake up. We got to turn back the clock. And the only way to do it is stand your ground. You don't have to, you know, confront people. Do it with your dollars. Talk to your friends. Talk to somebody. See something, say something. Call your representatives. Don't let them languish up there up the state, the various state houses. Call them up and say, we know you're a bum. You know, run for office. You know, just do something, even if it's wrong. Like Tommy Bagliazzi used to say, do something, even if it's wrong. You know, go bump into the furniture. Go boldly go into the wilderness.
Problem is, with the people that are in office, how many of them are really going to take what you say to heart or even represent what you say, you know, where they can? And
you gotta try.
Be strong enough
try.
To make a difference.
Yeah. The first is the chicken or the egg. Rule number one, term limits.
Mm-hmm.
Vote you out. You can't be in for – it's not a lifetime position. You can only be in for a maximum number of terms, and then you guts to go. You got to go do something else. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. You know?
That's a good point.
Many people are saying, and it's to the point of what you're making, Bugsy, is that, except it's a bit more overpowering, and that is many people believe that we're on the verge of a civil war, and what happened in New York with Trump the other day could very well be the thing that lights it off if this thing continues to get, but the press is playing it down right now, and the press has gotten too strong and too almighty. But the fact is people are thinking that we're in for another civil war. And there's going to be some camel's back where people say, okay, enough is enough. That's the fearful thing.
We're too nice. The educated, not necessarily, but hardworking people are too nice and too civilized. We will discuss and we won't do things. And the other day when they shut down a city and they put 37,000 New York City police officers on 5 days in a row work on overtime, and shut down a city for $200 million for something that was basically there's not no there there, and they're saying it's a process process crime, and it's statute of limitations wrong. Everything about this is wrong. Everything about raiding his home was wrong.
That's right.
And as he says, and you know what, you could take for what he says or not. You know, I'm not going to tell you that, you know, he knows everything or does everything, but I'll tell you what, he kept all his promises, and very few people can define what he's done wrong. And the other thing is, I'm telling you, is I don't know another man alive, including myself, that could take the slings and arrows that that man has taken on a daily basis. Forget about what he did in his prior life. I'm talking about what he did when he started representing the people of the United States. I couldn't get out of bed in the morning or function if they did to me what they've done to him.
I agree with you, and I don't even know how he keeps his wits about him. You know, my brother, Chip, was asked to meet President Trump when he was in office at the White House. So Chip went in. He was introduced, Colonel Adrian Bogart. And Trump, Chip said, Chip is his nickname, but my brother, Colonel Adrian Bogart, said that Trump's eyebrows shot up, and he said, I know your family. Now, he wasn't talking about Humphrey Bogart. He remembered that my father's parents, my grandparents, used to have lunch almost every Sunday with Trump's family. And he remembered that. Now, that's decades ago. But this man has such skills and such capacity. I mean, how he ended up in this place in our country, I do not know. But the next chapter's soon to open, and we'll find out, I guess. So that's our half hour. So that's our half hour this week. And Bugs, you come back every week if you can, anytime you want, because we love hearing from you.
Thank you. Because you
tell it like it is. And even though this was not entirely a dedicated car show, I think we made the very strong point that what is happening in the car industry is directly impacting every aspect of our lives. And we have to be aware that, you know, we're being put in a position where we're going to have to either make decisions and stand up for ourselves or take the consequences. And on that happy note, happy Passover, happy Easter. Bugs, we love you. Hezzy, we love you. And have a great weekend.
You too,
guys.
Take care. Stay safe.
All around. Thanks a million.
Be well.
Talk
to you
well,
guys. Very soon. Bye-bye. Love you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Well, here we have it. None other than Bugsy Lawler and Rory Wiles. And in the background somewhere, John Wiles. And then it's me. So let's look and see what else has been going on the international scene, so bear with me a moment as we move on to there. And 1 second. This is really quite interesting. 1 second here. Oh, it looks like someone's calling. I'm not sure who this is. Good morning, caller. Hello? Oh, hello? Okay. I guess for whatever reason, I don't know who that caller is, but that caller is off the line at the moment. Okay. Well, let's just see. We're gonna move on because I can't answer the phone call. Actually, yeah, can't do the phone call now. Bear with me a second here. Okay. Oh, yeah, this is probably one of the most important issues that's come about. Rockets have been fired at Israel from Lebanon after clashes at Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque. It seems like rocket fire from Lebanon targeted Israel today after clashes between Israeli police and Palestinians inside the Islamic world's third holiest site drew warnings of retaliation from around the region. Israel's army said it had intercepted a rocket in the attack, which was not immediately claimed by any group, and denied Lebanese media reports that it had launched a retaliatory strike. The rocket was fired from Lebanon into Israeli territory and was successfully intercepted, an army statement said, as Israeli media reported a salvo, quote-unquote, of projectiles had been fired into Israel. Well, the attack came amid heightened tensions after Israeli police clashed with Palestinians inside Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque before dawn on Wednesday and again in the evening. So Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was, quote, receiving continuous updates from the security situation or about the security situation and will conduct an assessment with the heads of the security establishment, his office had said. Well, Israeli emergency services reported a man had been lightly wounded by shrapnel and a female was injured while running to a shelter. Warning sirens sounded in the towns of Shlomi and in Moshav Betzet and the Galilee in northern Israel, the army said. Well, the Israeli military denied to Agence France-Presse that it had retaliated, quote, thus far, end quote, in response to reports from Lebanon's national news agency that Israel had struck targets in southern Lebanon. Well, according to the Lebanon report, Israeli artillery fired, quote, several shells from its positions on the border, end quote, towards the outskirts of two villages after the launch of several Katyusha-type rockets, end quote, at Israel. Well, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant had been briefed on the details of the events on Israel's northern border, a ministry spokesperson had said. The minister will soon conduct a situation assessment with senior officials in the defense establishment, he added. Then we have the Al-Aqsa clashes. Israeli riot police had on Wednesday stormed the prayer hall of Al-Aqsa Mosque in a pre-dawn raid, aiming to dislodge, quote, law-breaking youths and masked agitators, end quote. They said had barricaded themselves inside. The violence during both the Jewish Passover and the Muslim holy month of Ramadan sparked an exchange of rockets and airstrikes with militants in the Gaza Strip with fears of further escalation. Lebanon's pro-Iranian armed movement, Hezbollah, had warned earlier on Thursday that it would support, quote, all measures, end quote, that Palestinian groups may take against Israel after the clashes. Shiite militant group Hezbollah is the only Lebanese faction that kept its weapons after the end of the country's 1975 to 1990 civil war. Hezbollah forcefully denounces the assaults carried out by the Israeli occupation forces against the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and its attacks on the faithful, end quote, Hezbollah said in a statement. Hezbollah, an arch foe of Israel, has close ties with the Islamist movement Hamas, which rules Gaza, and with the Islamic Jihad militant group, which is also based in the coastal enclave. Well, the last rocket fired from Lebanon into Israel was in April of 2022. Security incidents occur from time to time in the border area between Lebanon and Israel, which is guarded by the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon. The United Nations Force urges strength and the rocket fire after the rocket fire on Thursday. So we'll just have to see what goes on here. Now, let's look at what happened with regard to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. More than 350 arrests took place after clashes erupted inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. So Israeli police clashed with Palestinians inside Jerusalem Al-Aqsa Mosque on Wednesday, sparking a military exchange of rockets and airstrikes and flaring violence as the Jewish Passover coincides with the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Armed police in riot gear stormed the mosque's prayer hall before dawn with the goal of dislodging, quote, law-breaking youths and masked agitators, end quote, who they said had barricaded themselves inside following evening prayers. The officers were met with a barrage of rocks and fireworks, police video showed, More than 350 arrests were made in the raid, which drew threats from Palestinian groups and wide condemnation from Muslim countries. One Palestinian witness, Abdel Karim Ikaim, 74, charged that police, armed with batons, tear gas grenades, and smoke bombs, burst into the mosque, quote, by force, end quote, and, quote, beat the women and men, end quote, worshiping there. A video widely circulated on social media showed police clubbing people on the floor inside the mosque. The Palestinian Red Crescent said it had treated 37 people for injuries, including some after the release from custody. Now, Israel's far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir voiced his, quote, complete backing, end quote, for police and praised their, quote, swift and determined, end quote, actions. Palestinian militant group Hamas, which rules the Gaza Strip, called on West Bank Palestinians, quote, to go en masse to the Al-Aqsa Mosque to defend it, end quote. Rockets were fired overnight from Gaza into Israel without causing casualties, prompting retaliatory Israeli airstrikes. The mosque in Israel annexed East Jerusalem is Islam's third holiest site. It is built on top of what Jews call the Temple Mount, Judaism's holiest site. It has been a frequent flashpoint, particularly during Ramadan, and clashes there on in May of 2021 stirred up the latest Gaza war that raged for 11 days. Then we have the rockets and the fireworks. On Gaza streets, protesters burnt tires and chanted, quote, we swear to defend and protect the Al-Aqsa Mosque, end quote. Calm had returned to the compound by the late morning when Israeli police escorted a small group of Jewish visitors through the site. An officer told an Agence France-Presse journalist that the police were only allowing those aged 16 over to access the compound. Israeli police said that the Palestinians had barricaded themselves inside the mosque from Tuesday evening and ahead of Passover, which started on Wednesday evening. After many and prolonged attempts to get them out by talking to no avail, police forces were forced to enter the compound in order to get them out with the intention to allow the Fajr, or the dawn prayer, and prevent a violent disturbance, end quote, the police said in a statement. Within hours of these, nine rockets were fired from Gaza towards Israel, the army said, adding that five were intercepted by air defenses and four struck uninhabited areas. In response, Israeli fighter jets struck two suspected Hamas weapons manufacturing sites in the Gaza Strip, the army said. The airstrikes were followed by new rocket fire from Gaza, and at around 6:15 in the morning, local time, Israeli jets carried out fresh strikes. Agence France-Presse journalists reported that, and no casualties were reported in the first salvo of strikes. Islamic Jihad, another militant group based in Gaza, said the rockets were, quote, a first warning message, end quote, following the Israeli, quote, aggression, end quote. Well, Palestinian Civil Affairs Minister Hussein al-Sheikh condemned the Israeli police action inside al-Aqsa, saying, quote, the level of brutality requires urgent Palestinian, Arab, and international action, end quote. The Arab League denounced, quote, the attack on the faithful and called an emergency meeting for Wednesday afternoon. Jordan, which administers the mosque, condemned its storming, quote unquote, and called on Israeli forces to leave the compound immediately. Saudi Arabia expressed its categorical rejection, quote unquote, of actions that contradict, quote, international principles and norms in respect of religious sanctities. Egypt, as frequent mediator in the conflict, said it holds Israel, the occupying power, responsible for this dangerous escalation, quote unquote. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict has described into or has descended rather into intensified violence since the most right-wing government in Israel's history took office in late December under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So far this year, it has claimed the lives of at least 91 Palestinians, 15 Israelis, and one Ukrainian, according to an agent's France tally based on official sources from both sides. On the Palestinian side, those killed included combatants as well as civilians. On the Israeli side, they included two members of the Arab minority. Then there's more stuff that's going on there. One second. A 13-year-old Palestinian boy was shot and wounded wounded his father and a son in East Jerusalem on Saturday, hours after a gunman killed seven outside a synagogue in one of the deadliest attacks in years. That goes back a few days back. So, it's constant. It's absolutely amazing. All right. Well, one second here. I want you to cover some other things as well. Let me see if we can get this done here. I think so. Well, protesters disrupted vehicle traffic in Paris's main airport, and police fired clouds of tear gas in other French cities as people marched, in their thousands in a new round of strikes and nationwide demonstrations on Thursday, seeking to get President Emmanuel Macron to scrap pension reforms that have ignited a month-long firestorm of public anger. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected to take to the streets for the 11th day of protests against French pension reforms on Thursday. Walkouts are expected to impact the transport, education, health, and energy sectors, with petroleum shortages hitting particularly hard in Paris. The strikes come amid a deadlock in discussions between unions and the government. On Wednesday, union representatives met with French Prime Minister Elisabeth Borne for discussions that unions branded a failure, quote unquote. French President Emmanuel Macron is on a state visit to China until Saturday. His office rejected responsibility for the failed talks and laid blame on the unions, notably the moderate CFDT, who it said, quote, did not want to compromise, end quote, with the government. Public anger has further ignited after Prime Minister Elizabeth Borne used Article 49.3, known as the nuclear option, to push pension reform through Parliament without a vote on March 16, sparking widespread anger. Days later, the government narrowly survived two no-confidence votes. French President Emmanuel Macron insists the proposed changes, which include raising the retirement age from 62 to 64, are needed to reform a moribund system. But some of the government's own experts have said that the pension system is in relatively good shape and would likely return to a balanced budget even without reforms. Clashes between protesters and police were reported on Thursday in cities through France, including Nantes and Rennes. Now, there are reports that police officers have been injured in the clashes currently taking place in the Paris protests, but it is unclear how many. According to an Agence France Presse journalist, a group in black, quote unquote, have been throwing bottles, cobblestones, and other projectiles at the police officers trying to secure La Rotonde. We find out that France's CGT union estimates that 400,000 people are taking part in the Paris demonstration. Well, the French Interior Ministry will issue its own estimate, which often varies widely from that of the trade unions later today. Things are starting to heat up in Paris. Le Parisien, the newspaper, reports that sting ball grenades have been fired near La Rotonde restaurant on Paris's West Bank. The restaurant is symbolic in the sense that Macron celebrated there after qualifying to the second round of votes in the 2017 presidential election. French newspaper Le Figaro has spoken to a member of Black Bloc, the violence-prone anti-capitalist collective, which has, despite police efforts, managed to infiltrate parts of the Paris protest. Quote, we're not against small shop owners. We're against everything that represents big business, end quote, he said, noting that he and his comrades were there to, quote, do things that can irritate police, end quote. According to Le Parisien newspaper, Paris police have carried out over checks of more than 1,330 people so far in a bid to prevent violence-prone groups such as the anarchist movements Black Bloc from infiltrating the demonstration and causing havoc. The newspaper said that 8 people had been detained during the checks. Then we have leftist firebrand Jean-Luc Mélenchon, which leads France Insoumise, or French, the France Unbowed, and also the left-wing coalition NUPES is taking part in the Paris protest. Quote, we're about to go from a social crisis in a democratic crisis, he told a broadcaster CNews. This is what it looked like when striking railway workers burst into the building hosting BlackRock in central Paris earlier. According to a protesters, Reuters spoke to, the building was targeted because of its private pension fund activity, the people with torches around them. Even though this is the 11th day of protest, since they began in mid-January, they have increased in violence after Macron's government last month used a special constitutional article, the so-called 49.3, to bypass a parliamentary vote to pass the reform. So, unbelievable. Earlier today, striking railway workers stormed the former headquarters of the Crédit Lyonnais Bank in central Paris, a famed building that now houses companies including the BlackRock investment firm, setting off smoke flares and whistling in a 20-minute action. It is not clear if the protests there are still ongoing. Then we have Annie Ernaux, the 2022 Nobel Literature Laureate, has backed calls for a thorough investigation after 4 female students said they were sexually assaulted by police in the western city of Nantes following a protest against President Emmanuel Macron's deeply contentious pension reform. Annie Ernaux, a 2022 Nobel Prize Laureate, has backed calls for a thorough investigation after 4 female students said they were sexually assaulted by police in the western city of Nantes. Well, it just goes on and on and on, and it's absolutely amazing what's transpired there. When you look at these demonstrations, you see the demonstrations in France. You see demonstrations in Israel. It is absolutely mind-boggling what's taking place all over the world. Now, let's just look and see what else is going on. Speaking about Macron is evidently counting on China to bring Russia to its senses. During a trip to Beijing, the French president and the European Union's Ursula von der Leyen are seeking to get Xi Jinping to pressure his ally Russia for peace in Ukraine. China has so far steered clear of condemning Moscow's invasion. French President Emmanuel Macron on Thursday had peace in Ukraine high on the agenda during a meeting with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping. Quote, I know I can count on you to bring Russia to its senses and everyone to the negotiation table, quote unquote, the French head of state told Xi during a three-day state visit to Beijing. Both leaders called on for Russia-Ukraine peace talks to take place, quote, as soon as possible, end quote. The pair, who held talks in Beijing's Great Hall of the People, also agreed that nuclear weapons should be excluded from the conflict. The talks were, quote, frank and constructive, end quote, the Elysee Palace said, while Beijing said that the discussions were, quote, friendly, end quote, and, quote, in-depth, end quote. Okay. All right. Von der Leyen welcomes Xi's willingness to speak to Zelensky. Well, the French president met Xi separately before a three-way talk with European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. She warned Xi that armed shipments to Russia would, quote, significantly harm, end quote, relations with the European Union. Quote, we also count on China not to provide any military equipment directly or indirectly to Russia because we all know arming the aggressor would be against international law. And it would significantly harm our relationship, end quote, von der Leyen said at a press conference following meetings with Chinese President Xi Jinping and Premier Li Qiang. While China has called for a peaceful resolution to the war, it has steered clear of condemning Russia's invasion of its neighbor. Last month, Xi visited Moscow and held lengthy talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin, in which the two leaders celebrated their, quote, close ties, end quote. Xi has not spoken on the phone with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky since the war started, although the latter has invited him to Kyiv and sought closer ties. Quote, it was interesting to hear that President Xi reiterated his willingness to speak when conditions and time are right. I think this is a positive element, end quote, von der Leyen had said. Well, strengthening the European Union and China ties. The visit comes as Europe and China strive to overcome growing differences in recent years, ranging from technological competition to the situation in Taiwan and China's growing closeness to Russia despite the war in Ukraine. Ahead of the visit, Macron said he wants to, quote, be a voice that unites Europe, end quote, over Ukraine. China, meanwhile, hopes the visit will help avert the kind of deterioration in relations that has been seen between it and the United States. Beijing sees Washington as leading efforts to contain its economic rise with an exchange of accusations on both sides in recent months. However, Europe's strong economic ties to China mean it has been forced to perform a balancing act with Beijing. During a meeting with Chinese Premier Li Qiang, Macron stressed the importance of dialogue between China and France, quote, in these troubled times, end quote. Now, although talks with Xi topped Macron and von der Leyen, there were also moves to inject new momentum into the European Union-China relations. Macron's delegation includes more than 50 French business leaders. Airbus CEO Guillaume Faury said that the company would open a second final assembly line in China that will double its production capacity in the country. It also signed a deal to provide China aviation systems for 160 new aircraft. French state utility EDF and Chinese utility CGN had signed a deal to renew their long-standing partnership. Deals were also signed between EDF and China Energy Investment Corporation for offshore wind energy. Now, bear with me a moment here. 1 second. One moment here. All right, 1 minute. Let's see if we have this here. This is really quite interesting. Volkswagen says that there is no evidence, quote unquote, of violations in Xinjiang plant. Well, Volkswagen's chief of China operations says he, quote, verified the facts, end quote, about accusations that one of the company's car plants in Xinjiang relied on the forced labor of Muslim Uyghur workers. The German automobile giant Volkswagen Group said on Tuesday, that there were no signs of human rights violations in its plants in China's western Xinjiang region. China's government has been accused of engaging in human rights abuses against the Muslim Uyghur population in Xinjiang since the 2000s, including mass forced labor in detention camps. The United Nations has said the allegations could constitute crimes against humanity, but China has denied all claims. Quote, of course we are aware of the critical reports. We take this very seriously, the head of Volkswagen's China operations, Ralf Brandstetter, had said regarding the charges of labor abuses in car production. Quote, we have no evidence of human rights violations at this plant. That has not changed after my visit, he added. He traveled to the company's plant in the city of Urumqi in mid-February for an inspection. Quote, I can talk to people and draw my conclusions. I can try and verify the facts, and that's what I did. I did not find any contradictions, end quote, Brandstetter had said. He noted that Volkswagen would continue to monitor the situation. There's mounting criticism of Volkswagen. While several major corporations ended their operations in Xinjiang following the United States' claims that China is committing genocide, quote-unquote, against the Muslim Uyghur minority, Volkswagen opted to stay. Some 29% of the 240 employees at the Volkswagen plant belong to ethnic minorities, 17% of them Uyghurs. Brandstetter said he spoke to seven workers individually, including Han, Chinese, Uyghurs, and Kazakhs, some through a translator chosen by Volkswagen and some in English, he said, that he followed shorter discussions. He held shorter discussions with other workers on his tour, adding that it all occurred without government supervision. But Luc de Pulford of the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China, a group of legislators from 30 democratic countries, including Britain, Germany, and the United States, said that labor standards in Xinjiang could not be verified as members of the Uyghur minority could not speak freely, fearing for their safety. The World Uyghur Congress in Germany and researchers from Sheffield Hallam University, who authored a report on the auto industry supply chain's links to Xinjiang, said that the visit and conversations with workers were likely planned and coordinated with authorities. So that's the story there. Hard to know which way to put. Now, this is a fascinating issue. Yeah, evidently a big question is, will South Africa arrest Putin? His pressure is mounting on South Africa to arrest Russian President Vladimir Putin if he sets foot in Durban later this year. However, due to Pretoria's close ties with Moscow, surrendering Putin to the International Criminal Court remains highly unlikely. That's something to think about. Now, and this is really quite interesting. Question is, why is Poland taking so long to build a floating gas terminal? Germany managed to build its first two floating liquid natural gas terminals in less than a year. It will take as many as 5 to 6 years for Poland. The question is, why the difference? Germany launched its first floating liquefied natural gas terminal at the North Sea port of Wilhelmshaven at the end of 2022. The pace of construction was record-breaking 200 days. The second state-leased liquid natural gas terminal at Brunsbüttel, port near Hamburg, which started operations earlier this year, was also built in less than a year. On the other hand, Gaz-System, responsible for the construction of similar infrastructure in Poland, said the launch of the Polish Floating Storage and Regasification Unit, FSRU, is scheduled for 2027 to 2028. FSRUs are essentially liquefied gas tankers that are equipped to regasify the fuel so that it can be transferred to the land. Well, Polish energy expert Piotr Przybylski believes that compared with Germany, Poland is doing the terminal on the cheap. Germany has had much greater fiscal flexibility, he told Deutsche Welle, adding that since the two German terminals started operating, the cost of renting the floating terminals has risen by 50%, and that means Poland will lose even more in the longer term, he added. Others are a little more generous. I would rather that Germany is doing it on the expensive, said Anna Mikulska, an energy market expert from Rice University in Houston, Texas. Quote, Poland is well situated for the next several years, given the existing liquid natural gas terminal, its extension, the Baltic pipe, as well as long-term contracts signed with non-Russian suppliers. Well, the reason for the time lag is a matter of existing infrastructure in the ports, as well as takeoff infrastructure that existed to a good degree in Germany, but does not in Poland. Sure, some infrastructure had to be built in Germany, but by no means was it a greenfield, Mikulska said. Well, the Baltic seaport of Lubmin in Germany is an example. Lubmin, which hosts a privately chartered floating liquid natural gas terminal, has a huge amount of pipeline takeaway capacity, since that's where the Nord Stream undersea gas pipelines from Russia to Germany land. In Poland, it is necessary to build a much larger scope of infrastructure than in Germany, Mikulska had said. Undersea transmission infrastructure and a berth for mooring the FSRU unit, as well as onshore gas pipelines with a total length of about 250 kilometers, should be built from scratch, he added. For Gaz-System, spokesperson Iwana Dominiak pointed out another break to construction. There's also a storage and regasification unit to be required at the last stage of the investment, she said. Currently, the design documentation is being prepared along with obtaining the necessary decisions and permits, both for the onshore and offshore parts. Last November, Gaz-System selected Denmark's Ramboli to design the FSRU berth and the offshore section of the gas pipeline to be laid on the Gulf of Gdansk seabed. Analysts also suggest that since Poland has found alternatives to much of the gas it sourced from Russia, the time pressure to fill gaps in Russian supplies is less keenly felt in Warsaw than in Berlin. Poland already has a liquid natural gas terminal with an annual capacity of 6 billion cubic meters in Świnoujście on the Baltic Sea. The terminal is capable of meeting around a third of the country's gas needs. The country has also built the Baltic pipe to source gas from Norway. And given the policy of phasing out natural gas in favor of other solutions, including biogas and bio-LNG, the extent to which we need further LNG terminals has been and is being analyzed in Poland, Robert Zeidler, a Warsaw-based energy sector lawyer, advised. At one time, there were even plans for two additional FSRUs in Poland, he said. It now appears that this is not needed, especially as cooperation has also increased with Lithuania on liquid natural gas, and there is an FSRU terminal there. As I understand it, Germany has relied on gas from Russia for years without building itself a significant alternative, so a quick change of approach at a time of crisis, regardless of the cost of creating such an alternative, is the answer to the current need, Zeidler had said. Now, gas system already operates the Świnoujście LNG terminal, whose import rose 57% in 2022. Since last year, Świnoujście had a regasification capacity of 6.2 BCMs a year, which is being expanded to 8.3 BCMs a year. The Baltic Pipe, a new pipeline with capacity of 10 BCMs a year, bringing natural gas from Norway to Poland via Denmark through the Baltic Sea, is now open. While domestic gas production may reach 5.5 BCMs this year, and Poland has also secured imports of LNG via the Lithuanian LNG terminal in Klaipėda. So in 2022, LNG became Poland's main source of gas, meeting one-third of the nation's demand, said Daniel Obajtek, CEO of Orlen, the main state energy firm. Well, the share of LNG in Poland's gas imports rose to 43% last year from 24% in 2021, while the share of Russian pipeline gas dropped to 20% from 61%, PKN Orlen said in a statement last month. Well, the United States accounted for more than half of PKN Orlen's total LNG imports last year, or 3.4 BCMs. The Polish importer said, now in 2023, the U.S. will remain Poland's primary supplier of LNG due to two long-term contracts with Cheniere Energy and Venture Global. So, my goodness, so these are some of the major, major concerns. Now, bear with me a moment here. Hold on 1 second. All right, let me just check a few more things. Okay, I guess we're all getting older, and it's becoming quite evident in Italy as well. Italy's Berlusconi has leukemia and a lung infection, doctors say. Seems that former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has been suffering from chronic blood cancer for some time and is currently in intensive care for a lung infection, as doctors said today. The 86-year-old, whose media empire has made him a billionaire, was rushed to the intensive care unit of Milan San Raffaele Hospital on Wednesday, heightening concerns over his increasingly fragile health. In their first statement on his condition, doctors Alberto Zangio and Fabio Ciceri revealed that Berlusconi had been diagnosed in the past with chronic myelomonocytic leukemia. They did not specify when the cancer was first spotted, saying only that it was not acute. Silvio Berlusconi is currently in intensive care for the treatment of a lung infection, they said, adding that the illness was related to the cancer. Two of Berlusconi's children, daughter Marina and son Luigi, arrived at the hospital on Thursday but did not speak to reporters and camera crews waiting outside. His younger brother, Paolo, also visited him and left at lunchtime with Luigi. Berlusconi's Forza Italia party is part of Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's right-wing coalition, though the former prime minister does not have a role in government. Quote, I spoke this morning with Professor Zanzio, and he told me that Berlusconi spent a quiet night. His condition is stable, Foreign Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Antonio Tajani told RAI, the state television station. Tajani, a longtime Berlusconi ally within Forza Italia, noted that Berlusconi had survived a series of health problems. Quote, we all want to be optimistic and we hope that the Lion will return soon to take charge of the party. He's our political leader and, of course, he never gives up, Tajani told the broadcaster. The party subsequently released a statement saying that Berlusconi had spoken in the morning to senior Forza Italia allies and urged, quote, maximum commitment, end quote, in Parliament. Quote, the country needs us, end quote, he said. He was quoted as saying. Well, Berlusconi, who made his fortune from commercial television, has suffered repeated bouts of ill health in recent years, and came out of the same hospital just last week after several days of unspecified treatment. I must say that I am very saddened. I feel a kind of melancholy, awe, and fear because he was a man who was great in so many ways, Tourism Minister Daniela Santanch told Radio 24. Berlusconi stepped down as prime minister for the last time in 2011. Weighed down by sleaze and scandal, including his notorious Bunga Bunga parties, as Italy came close to a Greek-style debt crisis. But he returned to the Italian Senate after a national election last September, and there is no obvious successor as leader of his party. As well as his enduring influence on Italian politics, Berlusconi's Fininvest Family Holdings Group retains control of the media for Europe broadcast business. His son, Pier Silvio Berlusconi, is chief executive of the company. Berlusconi built Italy's biggest commercial TV network and gained an international profile as owner of European soccer champion AC Milan before entering politics in 1994, when the previous political class was brought down by a corruption scandal. His health has deteriorated in recent years. He had heart surgery in 2016, has also had prostate cancer, and has been repeatedly admitted to hospital since contracting COVID-19 back in 2020. So, one second. Okay, why don't you check this thing out? Bear with me a moment. Okay, no, that's not what I was looking for. So bear with me a second here. One moment. Let's see. One second. This is really quite interesting. This is a special report. Evidently, Tesla workers shared a sensitive images recorded by customer cars. Out of London and San Francisco, we hear that Tesla Inc., assures its millions of electric car owners that their privacy is and will always be enormously important to us. And quote, the cameras it builds into vehicles to assist driving, it notes on its website, are designed from the ground up to protect your privacy. But between 2019 and 2022, groups of Tesla employees privately shared by an internal messaging system, sometimes highly invasive videos and images recorded by customers' car cameras, according to interviews by Reuters with 9 former employees. Some of the recordings caught Tesla customers in embracing situations. One ex-employee described a video of a man approaching a vehicle completely naked. Also shared were crashes and road rage incidents. One crash video in 2021 showed a Tesla driving at high speed in a residential area, hitting a child riding a bike, according to another ex-employee. The child flew in one direction, the bike in another. The video spread around a Tesla office in San Mateo, California, by private one-on-one chats, like wildfire, quote unquote, the ex-employee said. Other images were more mundane, such as pictures of dogs and funny road signs that employees made into memes by embellishing them with amusing captions or commentary before posting them in private group chats. While some postings were only shared between 2 employees, others could be seen by scores of them, according to several ex-employees. Tesla stated in its online that customer privacy notice that its camera recording remain anonymous and are not linked to you or your vehicle. But 7 former employees told Reuters that the computer program they used at work could show the location of recordings, which potentially could reveal where a Tesla owner lived. One ex-employee also said that some recordings appeared to have been made when cars were parked and turned off several years ago. Tesla would receive video recordings from its vehicles even when they were off if owners gave consent. It has since stopped doing so. Quote, we could see inside people's garages and their private property, said another former employee. Let's say that a Tesla customer had something in the garage that was distinctive. You know, people would post those kinds of things. Tesla didn't respond to detailed questions sent to the company for this report. About 3 years ago, some employees stumbled upon and shared a video of a unique submersible vehicle parked inside a garage, according to 2 people who viewed it. Nicknamed Wet Nelly, the white Lotus Esprit sub had been featured in the 1977 James Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me. The vehicle's owner, Tesla chief executive Elon Musk, who had bought it for about $968,000 at an auction in 2013, said it's not clear whether Musk was aware of the video or that it had been shared. Well, Musk didn't respond to a request for comment. To report the story, Reuters contacted more than 300 former Tesla employees who had worked at the company over the past 9 years and were involved in developing its self-driving system. More than a dozen agreed to answer questions, all speaking on condition of anonymity. Well, Reuters wasn't able to obtain any of the shared videos or images which ex-employees said they had kept. The news agency also wasn't able to determine if the practice of sharing recordings, which occurred within some parts of Tesla as recently as last year, continues today, or how widespread it was. Some former employees contacted said that the only sharing they observed was for legitimate work purposes, such as seeking assistance from colleagues or supervisors. So who knows what the intent of all of this is or what the real issue is, other than, I guess, Tesla says one thing, that it doesn't have videos, and yet somehow or another it does. So that becomes really a big question because I have no idea which way that's going to go, to be honest with you. None whatsoever. One second. Now, let's just look and see what else is on the screen today. Bear with me a moment. One minute here. Where is it? Let me see if I can get this. One moment, I'm having difficulty tracking this down. Okay, I think I got this. All right, I think I have this worked out. One second. Well, this is very frightening. It seems that there's a report of staggering church sex abuse of all places in Maryland. More than 150 Catholic priests and others associated with the Archdiocese of Baltimore sexually abused over 600 children and often escaped accountability, according to a long-awaited state report released yesterday, that revealed the scope of abuse spanning 80 years. Unbelievable. And they accused church leaders of decades of cover-up. Seems that the report paints a damning picture of the Archdiocese, which is the oldest Roman Catholic diocese in the country and spans much of Maryland. Some parishes, schools, and congregations had more than one abuser at the same time, including St. Mark Parish in Cantonsville, which had 11 abusers living and working there between 1964 and 2004. One deacon admitted to molesting over 100 children. Another priest was allowed to feign hepatitis treatment and make other excuses to avoid facing abuse allegations. Well, the Maryland Attorney General's office released the findings of their years-long investigation during Holy Week, considered the most sacred time of year in Christianity ahead of Easter Sunday, and said that the number of victims is likely for higher, far higher. The report was redacted to protect confidential grand jury materials, meaning the identities of some accused clergy were removed. So the staggering pervasiveness of the abuse itself underscores the culpability of the church hierarchy, the report said. The sheer number. Where is it? I was reading something else that came in. The state legislature passed a state legislature in Baltimore, in Maryland, passed a law to end a statute of limitations on abuse-related civil lawsuits, sending it to Governor Wes Moore, who has said he supports it. The Baltimore Archdiocese says it has paid more than $13.2 million for care and compensation for 301 abuse victims since the 1980s, including $6.8 million toward 105 voluntary settlements. Oh, God. Not good. Absolutely mind-boggling. Sort of stuff that happens nowadays. Well, that's the end of our time today. It's 11:30, and I've got another appointment. So I want to thank you all for being with us today, and hopefully we'll see you tomorrow. Take care and be well. And let me just sign off. Here we go. Goodbye.